Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 942. This episode is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. If the first thing that pops into your head is an affordable shave that is amazing, then get ready for this, Jonah Ray, who's sitting in on the intro.
And who has a famously shorn face.
You scruffy motherfucker. Dollar Shave Club gives you everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best: shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, and of course, the best razors you could possibly get. I mean, an amazing high-quality shave every morning is waiting for you from Dollar Shave Club's executive razor. But the true hero of any morning routine is their Dr. Carver Shave Butter. This actually helps the razor glide gently across your skin. And if your skin is sensitive, like a baby's bottom, like my entire face, then
can you say the name of the butter real quick, but do it in an old-timey, like, Smucker's ad?
Dr. Carver's Shave Butter. Here comes some Dr. Carver's Shaving Butter.
It sounds more Holmesy that way.
It does. Yeah, okay. So I'll make sure and do it then.
Yeah, so
in the end, when
on
I reference
day.
It again,
on
yeah, on the day, I'll do it again. Anyway, they're going to deliver everything to you. That means no more trips to the store, wandering the aisles hunting for razors, sniffing shampoos in the aisle to see if they're going to smell good on you. And then you have to, you know, wait in line at the cashier, scan, bag, bring your own bags these days because we can't harm the environment. So for a mind-blowing experience, join Dollar Shave Club today. And for just $5, you're going to get free shipping. You're going to get a six-blade executive razor plus trial sizes of old-timey shave butter, body cleanser. And
I was ready for it, and it still delighted me.
You know what? And this next one, the name of this next thing, I'm going to do in like a 30s gangster voice because it sounds like a Dick Tracy villain.
Can't wait.
Okay, so shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/ID10T. That's dollarshaveclub.com/ID10T. Katie Levine has the cork board.
I do. Robin Joyce writes, Fourth Wall Stage Company is a nonprofit community theater group in Worcester, Massachusetts, and they wrote how to pronounce that for me because I'm a dumb Californian.
Worcester.
That I started in 2010. We are partnering with the Worcester Historical Museum next month to present a production of Blue Yonder by Kate Aspengren for their Women's History Project. It's a series of monologues about the careers of 12 mesmerizing and sometimes eccentric women. Performances are March 22nd through the 31st at the museum. You can find more info and get tickets at fourthwallstagecompany.org, and that's the number 4. Also, the Lagunitas Brewing Company in Petaluma, California is hosting Pints for Paws this Thursday, March 22nd at 5:30 p.m. It's a night of beer, tacos, prizes, music, fun, and more, and all the proceeds benefit Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue. It's family-friendly. Admission is $25 for adults, $10 for kids, and that ticket price includes dinner. To find out more info or buy admission in advance, visit scwr.brownpapertickets.com, and tickets will also be available at the door.
I will only allow an alcohol thing because it's a pet thing.
When she said
I started to bristle at that. I'm like, are you promoting a beer thing?
But it's
on
also
my show?
It's for Sonoma, which needs a lot of help.
And
the pause.
And I'll allow it.
And it's kid friendly.
But you better watch yourself, counselor.
Yeah. I got something for your cork board.
Yeah.
I got something for your cork board.
April 27th and 8th, I will be performing a few shows at the North Bar in Chicago. I'm calling it the Festival of Me, where I'll be doing a stand-up early show on Friday. And late show, I'll be riffing with some local movie riffers out there in Chicago. And then on Saturday, I'll do another stand-up set, and then I'll be doing a live Jonah Radio. Cash and Neil are flying out.
Fantastic.
We'll be doing a live Jonah Radio at the North Bar in Chicago, April 27th and 28th.
Yeah, then the first week of April, I'll be at Comedy Works in Denver, and the last week in April, I'll be at Comedy on State in Madison, Wisconsin.
We're going to be real close to each other.
Super close. Please get warm in that region of the country. Please don't hold on to winter at the end of April. I beg of you. My thin California skin cannot handle your elements.
You know what you need?
What I need some old-timey. I need to smear some shaving butter all over my pelt.
You're not using it right.
You're not.
Hey, it seems like the shave butter is the first thing to go.
Captain Jack's taint liniment. Make your taint as smooth as a taint.
All right. This episode is Mr. John Boyega, who was fantastic. probably the most enlightened 26-year-old person I've ever met in my entire life. He's so well-adjusted and smart. And
he's 26?
He just turned 26.
But he looks like a man.
He does look like, and he talks like a man. No.
Neither of us
he
looks like men.
He's well beyond us.
Ugh.
By a lot. By a lot. Looks-wise and emotionally and philosophically, he's just...
Well, he's Moses.
And Finn. He's also
Finn. He's also Finn, yeah.
But he is in Pacific Rim Uprising, which is in theaters Friday, March 23rd. Also one of the producers on this film. Maybe it was in a Star Wars movie or two.
Yeah.
Attack the Block.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or just the one.
Yes.
Just the one, Attack the Block.
Just the one, Attack the Block.
It's time to attack the block again!
Yes. Attack the blocks.
Attack the blocks. Reattack the block.
Yes.
Rebuild the block.
Rebuild the block.
Yeah.
It's just about rebuilding the infrastructure and the roads.
Attack the neighborhood. Attack the block later.
So wait, what's bigger than a block?
A neighborhood.
Yeah, attack the neighborhood. That doesn't... No.
Doesn't really sound... Attack the street.
Attack the street. Attack the county.
Attack this... District.
Attack the blocks.
Attack the zone.
Attack the zone.
Zone it.
Yeah.
Zone it in.
We get it.
Yeah, we really zone this one in. Anyway, John Boyega's great. He is on this episode of the podcast, which is also brought to you by Spotify. If you like podcasts, and if you're listening to this, I'm guessing that you do, Spotify makes it easy for you to stream this podcast and many others like it on your mobile device, desktop app, smart speaker. Open the app on your mobile device or desktop, click the browse channel, and then click the podcast section. And you can stay thoroughly entertained during your commute to work, drive home, downtime, exercise time, work time, time when you're supposed to be paying attention to your relationship, but you're tuning out because you have avoidance issues. All thanks to Spotify. Listen to the podcast on Spotify. Also, LinkedIn sponsoring this episode. A business is only as strong as its people, and every hire matters. So don't settle for posting and hoping the right person will find your role and apply. You post to job boards and you hope that you're going to find the right person for the job. But think about it. How often do you check job boards, Jonah?
Constantly.
That's what I thought. For most people, it's very occasional. But then there's a place where people go to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. 70% of the United States workforce is there, and that is LinkedIn. It is the world's largest professional network. What a great way to find talent for your job. Just ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted to LinkedIn jobs over the past year. And because LinkedIn considers skills, experiences, locations, and more to match and promote your job potential to your candidates, businesses rate LinkedIn jobs 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs at LinkedIn every week. If you're not using it for your hiring needs, you're missing out. Go to LinkedIn.com/... I tried. It didn't really work there.
Yeah.
It didn't really work there.
Yeah.
Go to LinkedIn.com/ID10T to get a $50 credit to your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/ID10T for $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. Here is the ID10T podcast number 942. The intro with Jonah Ray, podcast without Jonah Ray.
Isn't that fun?
But includes John Boyega. Katie, get ready for the ride, the wildest ride in the world.
Now, this counts as me doing the entire podcast, and I can get paid for it, even though I wasn't there, right?
Katie, edit this man out of my podcast.
Katie, hurry up. Start the thing.
Please start the thing before Jonah squeezes me for another dime.
Step, 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 step. Slam.
Oh, he was really mad.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
How you doing, man?
Nice to see you.
You all right?
I did not wear this on purpose.
I know. I'm seeing the glass cups around as well.
These are actually our glass. I mean, like
I love
the
it.
Glasses we use every single day.
I love this. This is what I'm talking about.
These are the old, in the 80s, like Burger King did their old collector glasses.
I was going to ask because I was like, this looks pretty classic. I mean, Lando is looking exactly like me right now. Just maybe a foresight thing going on there.
This is a classic Lando. Yeah, these are all... Yeah.
These are all old collector items. And like, did they do that in England? Did they, are there like, do they do like, did they ever do like a wave of collector glasses and stuff with Happy Meals? And
I'm sure they did. Yeah. I mean, I first got a figure that I think was from a Happy Meal. It was Darth Maul. It was during the prequels.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So I'm sure that McDonald's deal goes way back.
It probably does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know that sounds like a dumb question. Like, in England, do you guys get toys?
No. Yes, we are affected by Western culture too.
But I didn't know how much... I might be wrong about this, but I feel like Comic-Con is not necessarily as old in England as it is here in the States.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Comic-Con is a toddler right now, actually. A toddler that with a very wild appeal.
Yeah.
And people love it in the UK. And there's also many other cons, you know, that I haven't even heard about. And they're springing out of nowhere. And, yeah, a lot is happening in terms of the nerd, the power of the nerd in the UK. So it's cool.
And you're very much at the center of it right now.
I mean, it's a bit mad. Well, I'm very much involved in the sci-fi world right now.
But Attack the Block was such a great movie. Yeah, and, yeah. And was that, when you did that movie, did you feel like, oh, this is sort of I like this genre, or did those just keep presenting themselves to you?
No, I mean, it actually goes way back. You know, before that, I mean, as a kid, I just loved sci-fi. I loved larger than life movies that kind of forced me to imagine, and to rethink this physical world that I just gotten so used to. Movies was an escape for me. So when I would think of my acting career and the kind of roles I wanted to do, I would always be excited by just the superhero sci-fi-esque kind of films. And so being a part of it now, I'm just like, yes. Exactly what I wanted to do. And I love other genres too. I mean, I have to take a hiatus on sci-fi.
Right.
For a bit to allow time for other stuff. But sci-fi was that one baby I wanted to build up first, you know.
Where did you grow up specifically?
Southeast Peckham.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And SC15, stand up.
Someone out there did.
I have to just, you know, rip the postcode.
And was acting a thing that you always thought you wanted to do, or did you fall into it?
I discovered it, you know, like how a kid discovers that they're, you know, good at football, or, you know, how a kid discovers that they might be, better than the other kids, you know, sketching or something. You know,
right.
There's just a popularity thing that comes with, you know, whatever you're good at. And in school, we had, you know, drama classes, and I just felt like I always had a great reaction from the kids and the teachers. And so that's how I got into it. I just stuck with what would make my life in school a bit easier, you know, to be one of the popular kids.
But what's the audition process? I mean, like, if you're a teenager and you're, do you think like, oh, well, I need to go kind of settle in London where all the auditions are?
I was born and raised in London. I didn't know about how the career works. I mean, at first I was just doing it as, you know, as part of enjoyment. It's only when I joined theatre school, it was more about training. It wasn't even about how the business works, you know, auditions, you know. It was about training. It was about, you know, contemporary dance, ballet, tap, you know, speech exams, Shakespeare. It was just that.
Are they snobby but secretly all want to be in movies? Or like, well, it's not the theater.
I mean, we just didn't know about about being in movies. We were, you know, we were kids. It was just fear. It was fun. We got to dance and sing and be in these shows, and people would really, really like them.
Yeah.
And Theatre Peckham was more of an inner city, you know, kind of theatre school. And it wasn't too far from my estate. So it was just, you know, it was a good place to go to, have some fun with some other kids, perform and go home, you know.
Yeah.
The business part, you know, didn't call just yet. Because we were like, we're still in Peckham, you know. We're just throwing on, you know, shows based on children's books.
Right.
You know, we're just, you know, having fun doing it.
But the business part is, I always wonder, it's always interesting to find out how people, because obviously the acting part, you know, you love doing.
Yeah.
But the business part actually occupies more of your time, I think.
Yeah.
And so was there a learning curve for you with that, and trying to, you know, with each film going, oh, I guess you got to worry about this, and you got to do this, and you got to do this. Was any of that fun?
I'm a business savvy person. I used to sell some of the best candy in school. For a great rate. I'm better than saying. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, I'd even put a tax rebate on that.
Oh, very good. So you're a good salesman. You're a good salesman.
But I've always just had an open mind to the business side of the industry, because I think, you know, obviously we love to enjoy it. We are artistic people who want to perform, but at the same time, you know, gotta have that roof.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta have me a house like yours, mate. Like, I'm looking around right now. I'm like, okay. Yes, mate. You know, we all want to be financially stable. And so that comes into it naturally. But then there's a learning curve in terms of, like, now you have an attorney and, you know, representatives, and, you know, you have to learn what they do. And,
right.
And then now, you know, you're the CEO of your own career.
Absolutely.
Like, you're the boss of your life. So you have to, you know, almost switch up.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it too, especially for people who are, you know, any kind of artistic endeavor, but thinking of yourself as the CEO of your own thing. Because I think a lot of people just go, oh, I'm an actor, so I'll just audition. And like, oh, you got to do a lot more than that.
Yeah, it's a lot more than that. And you know, it depends, you know, what you're aiming for. I mean, some actors come into the industry who are just appreciative to get a job on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
There isn't necessarily any kind of pinpoint on what they want the audience to feel creatively.
Right.
You know, as it concerns them or their career, they just want, are, you know, happy with working, and that's fine. But I came from a mentality with a specific goal, a specific appeal, and to want to be a part of, you know, an interesting time, because I just knew there weren't people like me out there just yet. And, you know, back home in England, you know, we only had a few people like Idris and like Adrian Lester who were over in the States, you know, getting, you know, high profile roles.
Mm-hmm.
So that changes the way that you approach things. And so you have to be much more open to the business, because, you know, as we say, when the Americans call, man, they're about their business, mate. You can't just be like, look, I want to do indies all the time, okay? They'll be like, hell no.
It's kind of funny because I think there's only one show that I work on that actually airs over in the UK, but I always think, like, man, it'd be so great to be known in England, because especially your stand-up circuit over there is incredible, because you basically just – stand-ups there can just tour a landmass the size of California over and over again.
Oh, yeah. And that's what they do. And it's, you know, it's ultimately, you know, genius. But, you know, the fact is for many of us, that is a small little island and a small little industry for film and TV.
Yeah.
And so, you know when you're done, you know, you do a few roles and you're like, okay, all right. I think I'm going to have to get on a plane and go to that place they call Hollywood. See Wagwan there.
how many upstairs, downstairs period pieces?
Oh, I know. I mean, how many upstairs, downstairs period pieces can I do? But, you know, you want more, and creatively, you know, America has much more to offer, man. You guys have a better buffet menu.
We do have a nice buffet
and I mean
menu.
That both actually literally
as a buffet. Yes, and also, and also in the entertainment business, buffet is quite expensive as well.
And it's great.
But I thought it was really interesting that your production company actually co-produced Uprising with Legendary.
Yeah,
so that is a nice, strong planting a flag in the ground in terms of your business and in terms of your production business. So,
yes.
You know, when did you create this production company, and what's the history behind it, and how's it going so far?
I created Upper Room Entertainment in 2015,
mm-hmm.
And it was a little while after The Force Awakens had released. And it was because, I mean, I was always intrigued when I started going to drama school, and I was with my agent, Femi Oguns, who's been with me from the start. I was always intrigued as to how everything worked in mm-hmm. film. Working on Attack the Block, you know, I didn't necessarily have a book that told me exactly this is how film works. It was meeting several different people. And I would notice, you know, Naira Park, you know, who also produced Shaun of the Dead and mm-hmm. Hot Fuzz, she would come to set and creatively she would just be involved in the choices, and then she'd be on her phone sorting and figuring things out. And I'd look at that and go, you know what, that looks pretty cool what they're doing there. I guess this is how, you know, you get to be a part of the birth of an idea, and you get to creatively be one of the minds behind a concept. And that for me has always intrigued me. So I founded Upper Room at the right time after Star Wars, when I felt I had enough leverage
mm-hmm.
to walk into rooms and say, well, creatively, I like to expand and I like to collaborate with the industry. And so I put it up and got a team together and said, Who Wants to Be an Avenger? Sorry, man. You got to say that when you say put a team together.
You do, yeah. You have
can't
to
just,
say that.
You can't just say you're going to
no
put a team together.
No one's going to fault you for saying that. Yeah, everyone, they would have thought it okay. if you hadn't said
I'm,
it.
I'm kind of pissed that I didn't have an eye patch. But you know what? Close to it. So I founded it. And I just wanted to be a part of telling stories, to be a part of the development of movies, and to be a part of the casting process, you know, to somewhat collaborate with directing previs and, you know, influence the CGI, mm-hmm. work on schedule, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a part of all of that.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's also not, that part is also not only creatively fulfilling, but, you know, it's just smart to be, it's just smart because you, as an actor, you just, if you're, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And so much of your life is controlled by factors that don't necessarily involve you.
Yeah, yeah,
That feels very scary.
Yeah.
I don't know how people just do that and don't freak out.
I mean, it's true. And it develops you also. I mean, being a producer, you get a bird's eye view on the whole system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are involved in the early days of writing to the late days of marketing ideas. You're involved in all of that, and your opinion matters, and your point of view matters. I don't feel like there's rocket science to kind of knowing, you know, how a movie is going to do. I mean, it's dependent on your artistic integrity, and dependent on just how you feel, what you've experienced, what you've enjoyed.
Sure.
And then we take a risk with these films. You, as the audience, decide, you know, it's the fans that made Star Wars legendary, not necessarily only the creative minds.
I mean, right.
There's a transfer of energy and art between us, the performance, and then, you know, evidently the audience. And I've always loved, you know, cracking that code. And you crack that code more as a producer than you would do, you know, as an actor.
Absolutely. But did you have to learn how, or are you still learning how to take off the producer hat and put on the performer hat and get out of your head? You know,
I mean, performing is just, it's just obviously been with me longer. My first wife.
Right.
You know, we have a connection. We're good. The kids are all right. You know what I mean? But producing comes in, and, you know, yes, there's more to get used to. But what makes it easier to just, you know, take off one hat and put on the other is that, you know, acting is just such a specific, you know, group. It's such a specific department in
right.
this whole process that I just can't get the two twisted. I mean, I guess what happens when they come close is when you're on set and you do a scene and you're like, yeah, I don't think that was the one. You go back and watch yourself. And what I like to do is when I'm referencing to myself to my production team is say, is reference myself as a third person.
How's so that, John doing
yeah,
today?
I don't think I believe Jake in this take. So I think we should switch that up and go for one more. And they play along with it. You know, it's just a great way of me just separating
yeah.
the two, because you have to be honest with yourself, you know.
But are you too judgmental? I mean, like,
no.
have to do that. That's a very fine line and a difficult one, because sometimes people are too in their own heads, and mm-hmm. they might focus on something that is, you know, whatever their own insecurity is.
Right.
And being able to remove themselves from that.
But my notes are based on continuous communication with the production team and obviously fundamentally with Stephen DeKnight,
right.
our director. So it's on his wave, and whatever we've collaborated on to kind of like form as our main idea for a scene, it's always based on that, because I had to, you know, pause, you know, one time when I was thinking about one of the takes or whether I should email Mary and say, okay, we might need to do a reshoot schedule and put that scene and do it again. And I'm like, wait, hold on a second. For what we discussed and decided, for what the intention of the scene was decided and discussed by me and the team. And the scene does just that. So leave it be. So you still have moments where you need to pull yourself back as a performer, but I think I'm getting better and better.
That's good. Yeah, and you mentioned something before about, you know, Star Wars, that universe, of course, being driven a lot by the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, because I have, you know, friends who've directed Star Wars movies and friends now who've been in Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And to me, if anyone ever said, hey, do you want to be a part of Star Wars? Of course, as the kid in me would go, absolutely.
Oh,
but then
yeah.
the other part would go, I don't know, man. That's a rough one, because it's, you know, it's very personal to people, and people are not always kind. And I don't know if I have the mettle to really be able to handle it. Did you expect, It's like even like George Lucas, like he creates this thing and then it's really not his anymore. And right, now it's right, literally right. not his, but
right.
creatively it kind of wasn't his after a bit too. Mm-hmm. Were you okay with that, or did that surprise you, or how did you adjust?
I just think a part of the process of creating a film is letting it go.
Yeah.
You know, you let it go when your baby is no longer a child in the house, which you're trying to perfect for the world, and you prepare this child and then you send this child to different territories. You know, China gets it, Japan gets it, the UK gets it. There's different, you know, approaches to trailers and all that. And you literally see your creative egg go out into the world and it's shared. Everyone shares it. Some people don't like it. Some people like it. Some people just like, eh. And you just have to, you have to get used to that as being part of the process, you know, and you have to at least, you know, make sure you're spending time in while you have the time to develop and film is making it the best you can be. And that's all you can possibly do.
Right.
That's all you can do, really.
I know, but I've always been impressed by your, you just sort of radiate positivity in the face of, you know, sometimes like really toxic negativity.
Yeah, man.
In a way that, you know, when they did the original Star, you know, like mm-hmm. any of the original Star Wars, mm-hmm. there was no social media. There was no, you know, like people didn't have a place to comment. They might write a letter, but who, you know, who was ever going
to
see that?
That was a significant thing about Episode 7. You know, I had to pause sometimes with talking to Daisy when me and Daisy would have these moments where it was like an out-of-body experience where we'd be on set and we'd like look around and be like, we are actually going to be in Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And we would reference the kind of, you know, response from the audience that we would expect. And, you know, we would talk about it, you know, in full transparency and be like, this is, you know, huge. You know, we're going to expect some negative comments and positive comments, but regardless, you know, you got to stay positive because, to be honest, you have to be in a certain position for people to judge you like this.
Absolutely.
You have to have, you know, defeated a really big obstacle and become successful for people to be like, I don't think John was great in that Star Wars movie. And I'm there like, wait, I'm in a Star Wars movie?
Repeat that last part.
In
a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. How many Star Wars movies are you in? Zero, right?
I mean, it's like, I didn't like it, you know, I don't feel Finn maybe good enough in the third installment. Wait, I made it past the second? You know, it's great, you know, and that for me is how I live life every day. You know, it's not always positive. Like, you know, I have access to obviously of other emotions, just
of
like
of course.
But you know, it's positive. And to be honest, most Star Wars fans are brilliant. They're fantastic.
Yeah,
they're supportive. And even I've met fans who don't creatively agree with some of the movies, but I'm still able to talk and have discussions with them, you know, and debate about it, and it's all good. You know?
Yeah,
and I'm cool with that.
That's great. I mean, and I love that idea too. It just made me think. I've never thought of it this way, but it's really just kind of like, what part of the sentence do you focus on?
Yeah.
I didn't like you in that Star Wars movie. Hey, I'm going to focus on the Star Wars movie part.
It's because genuinely growing up with Star Wars, like I saw Star Wars as Star Wars. Like, you know, I didn't think to myself, I knew I was going to be a part of sci-fi and I was working towards being a part of sci-fi in a very, very cool way. But I didn't know it would be Star Wars specifically.
Right.
I mean, you know, I am not the Lord Jesus Christ. I don't have, you know, that foresight. But for me, I was just like, this is every day. It's a shock to me. Like, I'm still not over it. And I thought I would be after two movies, but I'm not over it. It's crazy.
I mean, it's nuts. And the second that you were announced, you know, it's that first teaser. Because JJ did a really great job of kind of seeding stuff out on Instagram. And
he's a genius.
Bits and pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you'd see BB-8 kind of roll in the back.
Yeah.
Like, it was such mm-hmm. a great. And instantly, the second, you know, like you crawl out, like you come over the dune and you pull off a thing. And it's like, now everyone knows who you are.
Yeah, it's done.
It doesn't. The business doesn't necessarily work that way anymore, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where it's just like overnight,
right.
Holy shit, you know, everyone knows now.
Yeah, it was nuts. You know, I remember JJ showing me that trailer on the iPad. He was like, well, this is what we're going to release. I remember seeing it, and the first boom, I was just like, whoa, damn. So we're not even going to have a back of the head shot, you know, a little side profile of a lion saying, you know, I want something more to fight for. We're not going to do that. We're just going to go, boom, Star Wars is back, and in a much more, you know, a dynamic and powerful way. And I really, that time was crazy for me. It was nuts.
Well, and also the other interesting thing about what it seems like you're doing is, as much as Star Wars is a part of your life, you know, working on all these other things so that it doesn't entirely define who you are as a performer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big major thing. I mean, I had done projects before Star Wars. I didn't feel like a newcomer when working on Star Wars. I felt obviously like a newcomer on obviously this kind of exposure was unlike anything I'd ever see.
Right.
And I knew that this would make me more, you know, relevant in on a day-to-day basis, given obviously the merchandise pool of Star Wars as well. You're a constant reminder to the general public. But you know, it for me, it was still shocking. It was still shocking on a day-to-day basis to be part of something so huge, but then to also be like, wait, hold on a second. I need to start packing on other projects too.
Right.
Because I believe in my own versatility. I believe in my ability to jump into other parts, and you know, I want the audience to believe that too. So I'll go work on another stuff. I wanted to take a break, but
yeah, of course,
I couldn't do it.
Well, yeah, and just like, you know, it's almost like the 10-year overnight success story. Like, I've been doing it for a really long time, and then, you know.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I still get people saying, you know, you look like that guy, Moses, from Attack the Block. the dots are knocking, and it's really? Like, whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know. I don't know. Much elsewhere.
Hope he's well. Heard he's doing a play at Donmar. but it was cool, you know, and it has been cool when, you know, you experience people who connect the dots and go, oh, okay, you have done other stuff.
Yeah.
And I continuously do.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a, you know, I almost feel like if there was a way to sort of squeeze out your brain and get that juice for people of, because the thing that I enjoy hearing you talk is that, because you're still a pretty young guy. Like,
yeah, man.
Have a lot, you're in your mid-20s. I think your birthday's coming up, isn't it?
But yeah, I'm going to be 26.
Happy almost birthday.
Hey.
Hey. But, you know, I don't remember being that comfortable in my skin in my 20s. I remember kind of being freaked out. Mm. And there's a really nice confidence, but not like you're not cocky about it, but you just seem very comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
So how does one create that, people are asking?
I don't know. I mean, I put out an Instagram post because I wore a really clean outfit and I was feeling myself in the outfit. I just looked at myself and I went, you know what? You look great today. So I put it out on Instagram. And for me, I was just kind of like, I understand how people can be, you know, perceived as cocky sometimes.
Sure.
Because they're just so comfortable in their own skin. But they're not cocky. The world is just not, it is so sensitive right now that people can't look at themselves and go, wait, let me pinpoint what is positive.
Sure.
Let me pinpoint what I'm actually doing well at. Because how else are you supposed to be motivated to move forward and to make better decisions if you don't know, you know, how far you've come and you're just fixating on what's wrong with you? And so I told my Instagram followers, write and comment something positive about yourself. And it started off real people having cold feet, like, I have a nice approach to things. And then you see them comment again and just go, you know, my smile is brilliant.
Yeah.
I really like and I love that, you know, being comfortable in your own skin is it kind of defeats a lot of future anxiety you might see coming your way, given that as human beings, we are all forced to step out of our circumstance eventually as adults to go for our jobs, to go for our livelihood and all that kind of stuff. And so for me, I like, you know, being comfortable in my own skin, but it's not, you know, meant to upset you.
Of course.
I'm just comfortable in my skin.
Right.
And I would love for you to feel that way about you too. And so that's something for me that has been a mentality, you know, and I grew up around, growing up in the theater and growing up around kids who, you know, were doing ballet and contemporary, and that wasn't our background. Like, we was the chill kids, so we were just like, why you got me doing pirouettes, man? But we were forced to go out of our own skin and be comfortable doing different stuff. And I guess that being a part of me growing up and seeing people like Letitia Wright, who's now in Black Panther. We were all together training in drama school, and Daniel Kaluuya, who I came across many times. We were part of a group of people who were just kind of like, you know what, we're just going to just be you and try to find your own path in this. And I just guess that's just now embedded in my day-to-day life.
Did you ever discuss with them, with these people that you came up with, like what your plans were, what you thought you were going to do or what you wanted to achieve? Were you a support group in any way?
Yeah, I mean, a few people, Letitia Wright, obviously who knows in Black Panther, Daniel Kaluuya, who is in Get Out.
Yeah.
I saw.
And also Black Panther.
And also Black Panther. I met Daniel when he was doing a show called Sucker Punch.
Uh-huh.
He was playing a young boxer, and he done a whole monologue while doing a double unders with a skipping rope, and
it was intense
and it was raw and it was real, and I spoke to him, you know, I waited for him at the stage door, and we discussed the future, where we're going, what we have planned, and you know, it was a nice discussion to have, to gain motivation from someone who's also aiming for the same type of thing. And then with Letitia, you know, we used to speak extensively, because after school we would walk to the McDonald's in Dorston, all of us kids, you know, we would kind of meet up there and talk about the future. And, you know, we all spoke about wanting to be part of feature films, and imagine, you know, this exploding and going into, like, you know, talking about our, you know, our very existence being a part of these roles and what it would be like. And just feels like a movement now, you know, everyone's just getting theirs and it feels good.
Yeah, that is great. And especially because you'll always, you know, even if you kind of lose touch with people, because everyone gets busy,
mm-hmm.
but then you'll kind of reconnect in places, and it'll you be will. Like it
Look,
never...
It's mad. I remember seeing Michael B. Jordan in the hallway. We were both auditioning for this HBO show. And I remember seeing Michael B. there, and I remember seeing Amel Amin there. Amel Amin, who played Albie in Maze Runner,
mm-hmm.
he was also there. So you're constantly crossing paths with people who... Oh, you look at them and you're like, they're working towards the same goal, and they're putting in the work the same way you are. And, you know, personally for me, seeing people like that was always a constant motivation. I was just right. like, wow, it's not only me. So I've got to make sure, you know, I'm on point, and I take this as seriously as they are. It's just inspirational. It's contagious.
And it's nice to know that, you know, there's room for... It's not just like there's room for everyone to succeed.
Yeah, there is. I mean, and there is a competitive element. You know, there is. You know, but it's what you feed into. I always say jealousy is wasted time. You could have used that time being motivated. You know, use someone else's success to motivate yourself and create your own.
Right.
So I always believe that, because, you know, I just feel, you know, jealousy just strings out the whole process.
Yeah.
Afterwards you realize, wait a second, oh yeah, I can do it too in my own ways. Like, what was the point of all of that?
Right.
So, you know, seeing those guys, you know, coming up was just a great strength. And then now to see everybody, you know, being established and reaching the goals that they said and mentioned, for me, it's a crazy life experience.
Yeah. And the jealousy part, again, is sort of like focusing on the wrong part of the sentence. It's like,
come on,
like,
man.
Hey, that other person's doing well. Maybe that should motivate you to work hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And let also try you. To achieve something.
Yeah, yeah. There's something, you know, there's no doubt that it can make you automatically feel a type of way. And as human beings, sometimes that just happens.
Yeah.
But it's what you do and how you harness that energy, I feel.
Yeah. And that, it's sort of building off that idea, is when you say to your Instagram followers, like, hey, what's something positive about yourself? I think people should really understand that even if you're a positive person, that doesn't mean that you feel 100% all day, every
yeah,
day.
Nah,
everyone feels shitty at times. Yeah. Everyone feels, but it's just figuring out, I think, how to navigate that and try to, you know, push through it or work around it.
There are harsh days, man. You know, success and all that kind of stuff, you know, is not glossy. You know, there's your human life is still very much there saying, now, you got some things to learn. And just because your finance is on point doesn't mean now you become, you know, better than anybody else, or you know, for some reason your maturity levels or what you have to learn now is fulfilled. No, you know, you still go through your process.
Right. And so what, as you're entering your 26th year.
Oh, yes. Very seasoned now. Very well, yes.
He's an elderly gentleman of 26.
What are you working on personally that you feel like, you know, now that I'm going to be 26, these are some of the areas that I want to improve or work on or get better at doing?
I think for me is, you know, communication is one, you know, big thing I'd love to improve. Because listening is so much, it's just a big part of also knowing how to learning how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And going into producing more, being at the forefront of these discussions that happen, you know, behind the scenes, you know, I feel like communication and also listening has to get amped up, because I wouldn't want to wait, you know, to be juggling several projects for me to then get things twisted and in my head, you know, I'm communicating the wrong things and all that. So for me, that's just one thing. And then it helps with your personal life too. So why not, you know, helps you become a better friend.
Yeah.
I'm a brother, I'm an uncle. Do you know what I mean? So it's those things that I feel like, you know, improving that can also benefit you on a career basis.
God, you must be the coolest uncle.
No, I'm dope. I mean, he doesn't see it. I don't know what's wrong with him. I do not know what's wrong with him. So this guy, and I call him a guy because my nephew's 2 years old. But
sure.
But he is also 75. He's an old man.
Got it.
He's the type to kind of shake your hand and peacefully trot along and walk away. He was at the Star Wars Last Jedi premiere and was more fixated on the audience and the crowd.
Sure.
Than he was on the whole experience. I don't understand that kid, and I'm working with him every day. Every day.
On his terms, of
but
course.
I mean, he loves a good Finn action figure. I mean, he thinks we're two different people.
Of course.
I'm trying to blur the lines.
Yeah.
Not working.
No. Nope.
Not working.
Give him in like a couple years. You know, what's going to be fun is, and I hope you're around when it happens, is when he finally connects, like, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
That guy who hangs out in my house. Wait a minute.
Yeah, he doesn't know now. You know, I'm Uncle Don, and Finn is Finn, and Finn is fun. Uncle Don, boring.
But someday
you'll learn, kid.
Come on. Do you have are there role models or mentors to you, or are there people whose careers you go, that's kind of everything that they're doing, that's kind of something that is interesting to me?
I mean, I was motivated by so many people at so many different times, and I feel like I was motivated at those times for specific reasons. You know, sometimes you're at a stage, and so your mind, you know, you notice sort of certain things more, and you gain some motivation from that. From the UK, it starts off with people like Noel Clarke,
mm-hmm.
you know, who is basically, you know, for me, like one of the first Avengers, you know, the guy that came in and shone a cinematic light on the lifestyle in inner city London,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I feel like, you know, movies that he did, like Kidulthood and Adulthood that he directed, paved the way for movies like Attack the Block, you know, and Attack the Block, you know, gaining recognition in the States and coming over here. I met various, you know, other people in which I was always inspired by. Idris Elba is someone I'm inspired by. And it's also my colleagues, you know, Daniel Kaluuya, Letitia Wright, Malachi Kirby, Damson Idris. You know, these are all actors who I'm just like inspired by on a day-to-day basis, you know, because I see, you know, my story in their stories, because there's so much similarities and we come from the same background. And every day for me, you know, I learn from what they do and what they say.
That's fantastic. Mm. And what's great is that you have access to these people too.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, you know, you could just call up and go, hey, how do you do this? Or how do you, you know?
I mean, it's great. It's incredible to see and to watch. It's incredible. I can't even believe I'm a part of it, you know?
So what other movie, what other set, because then we'll talk about Uprising in a sec, but what are some other things that you're working on or things that you're excited about at the moment, other types of roles or other types of production opportunities?
What's exciting is, you know, with producing something like this gives you the opportunity to now produce things you're not in.
Right, yes.
Which is strange.
Yeah.
And I'm working with something with Femi Ogans, my producing partner, and also with Big Talk.
Okay.
We can't say what it is, but
Big
Talk, of course, done Attack the Block.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on something real, real, real special. You know, it takes from British culture and growing up, our various experiences kind of like splattered out onto the paper. And we're working with a phenomenal guy called Sebastian Teal.
Okay.
Who has been an online director for a while, but does so much cultural dynamic stuff, especially growing up in London. You know his comedy sketches, you know his pieces that he does, and so working on that is exciting. And then, you know, I've got a writer's period in April. I go away to my secret location and, you know, I write and create because I've got a deadline for the next slate of things to do. You know, there's some familiar names. Can't say them now, but names you're familiar with. and we're brainstorming and working on stuff, and I can't believe I can get to sit in the same room with him and just, you know, collaborate and creatively go, okay, cool. What movie do you want to do? What should we help develop?
Just build it from scratch.
Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking all the time. My mind just, I just love concepts that are larger than life. And, you know, I love dramas and comedies. And so thinking up things is something that I do, you know, just as.
And what types of stories do you think are important to tell right now? I mean, besides things that are just like, oh, this is entertaining. Like what sorts of culturally important stories do you want to tell, or emotionally important stories do you want to tell?
I think, and this actually circles back to Pacific Rim in a way, is something that stood out to me, is that stories that amp up unity for me is something that I really, really love. You know, even thinking about, let's go just the most popcorn, like something like The Avengers, mm-hmm. Infinity War. Although it's a superhero movie, although it's larger than life, although, you know, we can't build an Iron Man suit and fly around, what's great is there's something about unity that gets us all excited. Mm-hmm. Several different people from several different walks of life with unique stories of their own coming together to coexist.
Right.
Because right now in the world, to coexist is actually some of the most complicated. It's like complicated right now. Just to merely coexist right now, things are sensitive. You know, it's hard to imagine a group of people choosing, you know, mentality-wise, to simply express their differences and to be okay with coexisting regardless.
Right.
So movies that explore that in an interesting way is brilliant. And I've always said the best sci-fi has the best social commentary. You could read between the lines with E.T. You could even read between the lines with, you know, various different stories like Terminator. You know, mm-hmm. It socially had something to say, but without being too preachy.
Right.
Sci-fi is sci-fi.
Right.
But those are the things I want to explore as well. And lately I've done a play on stage called Wojciech, mm-hmm. that delved into the minds of the emotionally unstable and for those who have mental illness problems. And for me, playing that part was something that exposed a new interest, you know, the unique experiences that the day-to-day man, you know, goes through, but that those of us who are fortunate enough don't necessarily know about is something that I want to explore too.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it seems that your life is almost that it's almost a burden how many choices. I mean, it just seems, well, because when you can kind of do, you know, when from more or less you can kind of do what you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, that can be also kind of daunting, because like, oh my God, what do I do and how do I make the right choice? And, you know, especially the more successful people get, sometimes they get more scared, or they get afraid to take risks, or they feel superstitious or whatever. Yeah. And
I mean,
so
there's lots of that. And I feel like those feelings are sometimes valid, you know, and it's for you to go through your process, feel the fear and then defeat it, because, you know, we all want to artistically get and, you know, be a part of, you know, bigger and better stuff.
Right.
But you can't help but be motivated by what's going on around you. You know, we just recently got Get Out, you know, by Jordan Peele, which explores obviously these race issues in a way that I've never seen before.
Right.
And so, you know, you're seeing people around you take risks, but still gain, you know, commercial success. And, you know, you tap into the masses of human beings around the world of people that are good and are good with differences and are willing to explore your movie. And, you know, you have to defeat your own fear to be a part of that regardless. You know, there's something about taking the risk, and it's what you're going to have to do anyway, because who knows what movie is going to be great and what movies people are going to be like, yeah, nah, we don't like it.
Right.
So it's, you have to just understand it's a risk.
Right.
It is what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there are many great lessons to take away from Get Out, because it really, for so many different reasons, innovated, a certain type of storytelling in terms of like a horror thriller, in terms of the cultural statement. But then also, I think the really important lesson to take away for people is, you know, don't copy what Jordan did on the surface.
No.
Copy the fact that he had a very specific personal story to tell. And he told it simply and beautifully.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, that's the lesson. Like, find what's personal to you and find what's important to you and tell those stories. Don't chase, you know, don't chase the audience.
Yeah. I mean, what is seen as commercial success is being redefined every day.
Yeah.
Every day. And I think with much more conscious people that we're getting, who now not only want to be entertained, but they want to be provoked by good characters, good story. It's a great time to create. But also, there's several different platforms. There's platforms for kids too. You know, much more people are suited to creative content that are meant for the younger audience as well. And so there's a way now. People are balancing the two. I mean, look at It.
Yeah.
Being like, what the hell, man? You know, I'm not the biggest horror person. You know, I'm not the person that goes in to see every horror film that comes out. But that film just intrigued me in a different way. And so for me, I'm just like, wow, man, they can do it, man. I'm going to start, you know, I need to start slapping the back of his head, man. Figure something out.
Figure it out, John. Figure it out. You got to figure it out. Figure it out now. But with Uprising, just for people who maybe, because I'm sure a lot of people saw Pacific Rim, but this is, can you just kind of explain where in the timeline we are with the Pacific Rim story?
Yeah. So obviously the first Pacific Rim ended with Stack of Pentecost and Riley closing the breach. Mm-hmm. And so we thought that the kaiju couldn't come back. We are 10 years from the first movie, but we pick up with Stack of Pentecost's son, who previously had been living in the shadows of his father. Now he is the prodigal son that never came back, and so we catch up on his life, and he is just a little bit of a bad boy, stealing high class Jaeger tech, duping those who cross his path, and he lives in half a mansion. And it's about his rise to being a hero, but also specifically him having to lead a younger generation of Jaeger pilots to glory. And there's a new threat. The kaiju have come back in a very specific way.
Okay.
Far more intelligent, far more strategic, and they just want to just destroy us. And it's time. It's a story about the young generation, standing up against an obstacle that's bigger than themselves.
I'm so glad we were at a time period where, I mean, I watched all the, I watched a lot of it, like Ultraman. I watched a lot of the Godzilla movies, Mothra, Gamera. Yeah. And so as charming as those were, I am kind of glad that we're at a place where it's sometimes fun to watch a guy in a rubber suit stomp on a model city.
It is.
But, we are so, how close were you in the production of this film to the, oh, it's got to look like this, and the CG's got to be this, and then the practical effects have to be this? Were you that involved?
I jumped on that big time. I found myself, after rapping on set, and at the end of the day, I'd go straight into the visual effects world, and we would have back to back meetings about this big fight that we were supposed to have in this city. I mean, it was deep. You had to be strategic. The roads had to make sense. This was like real stuff. And obviously, we would shoot interior shots for the compods, where obviously we had the actors inside the robot head, which was built on hydraulics. And so we had the physical element, up and going, but the outside world was still putting together. So I just made sure I stayed on top of it by obviously having a copy of pre-visuals every day.
Mm-hmm.
To then relate back to Steven and the other guys to make sure that what happens inside the compod adds up and matches up, because my emphasis was that I want to feel like the world outside merges with what's going on inside. I don't want the audience to ever feel like, nah, man, these guys are in the sound studio, man. They ain't in no Tokyo. I did not want that comment. And so that meant, specific, shots that we had planned, and some of you see in the trailer, when the two pilots have the whip behind them outside, you see the kaiju stand up, ready to fight, and you merge those two. I want it to be seamless. And so obviously that meant, raising the ideas with the technology that we can use in the movie, having this kind of like hologramic effect inside. Yeah. The compod, even when a kaiju gets physical with a Jaeger, you see the pilots physically holding a hologramic kaiju
right.
in their hands. It's just a way of merging that. So yeah, visual effects for me, I had to stay on top of. And obviously, now we're making a Pacific Rim where the fights are in the daylight.
Right, right, right.
No rain for you, boys. There ain't no hiding. There's no rain, no smog.
It's a brave move. It's a very bold move.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember one of the shots that was so problematic to me was the merge of this mega kaiju, which we've seen in the trailers.
Yeah.
When these little critters come out and merge these kaiju to create this mega beast. And I was just kind of like, guys, we need some smoke or something. Or all we're looking at is like some weird mating process of the kaiju that doesn't really... Yeah, you know, it's looking to me, you know, there's threesome going on here, man. We need to sci-fi this up.
Yeah.
I need more sparks, more smoke, and we just to get much more of an atmosphere. And I enjoyed being a part of that process.
I mean, you talk like a director. It feels like that's not out of the question at some point.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I have a respect for what they do. And at the point where, you know, I can tap into an actor's ego and just gain a credit
mm-hmm.
when it's, you know, secretly a DP that's doing all the work, I won't touch it unless I'm worthy, man. It's one of those Thor things. You know, when I'm worthy of the hammer.
You're going to lift the hammer?
Yeah, yeah, maybe. But for now, with directing specifically, I come as a student.
For now. But it definitely feels like at a certain point you're going to go, I think I need to try this. You know, it's like to get
you said
that
was like that was almost like a new flavor of a drink. It's like I just gotta
need to try this one. I need to donate 2 years of my life trying this thing.
But what they do is just mad. I mean, you know, even JJ. You know, I'd look at JJ sometimes and be inspired by the stuff he do. You never notice it, but creatively always having to kind of decide and being the leader on set. Even your energy as a human being is what could possibly dictate the energy of your crew.
Sure.
Also is a huge responsibility.
So yeah.
I don't take that lightly.
Yeah. And you know, you forget too that whoever the lead cast is and whoever the director is and who the producers are, I mean, that creates a cascading effect that sets the tone.
Oh yeah.
For everyone mm-hmm. and the production. And if they're kind of dicks, then that filters down. But if they're positive, mm-hmm. even when they probably don't feel like being positive all the time,
yeah.
That's so important.
Yeah, it's important
to the life of the project.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the collaboration and the best kind of collaboration, you create magic. You do.
Yeah. Do you have a good sense of how you work at this point in terms of like, okay, I can work for 90 minutes, I can write for 90 minutes, but then I need to take a break, or I need to write for 5 straight hours, or I'm mm-hmm. not creative if I do this. Like, do you kind of have a sense of how you best create?
I mean, I know with each story, it motivates a different thing. So when I'm writing things that are much more grounded in reality and or if it's something based on a specific person, the element of research starts to, you know, obviously have much more precedence. Like it's research and then emotionally trying to get to yourself to really understand and gain a lot more perspective before yeah. writing characters is something that I don't take lightly. I mean, sometimes the prepping stage of a concept will go over by 2.5 weeks because, you know, I'm too scared to write and put my pen to paper to write an official Bible, you know, to say, okay, cool, this is the concept, here's the world. But when you're dealing with grounded stories, you're having to tiptoe, you know, amongst reality. But when I'm writing something like sci-fi or, you know, or within the realm of superheroes, I find my imagination can fly. But it's about adapting it to the specific format. When it's film, you're trimming constantly. But also my emphasis on making a layered world. You start to consider things you before you won't consider.
Right.
You know, you're making characters, but now you want to create the world that they're in. And it depends on the concept. But I have a project now in which, you know, I have to consider the way in which a government in that alternate universe would work. How traffic would work, you know, what kind of intoxications are around in the atmosphere in that kind of world or in that kind of planet. You're building literally a universe in your head, and that approach is also different. So it really does vary.
I mean, it sounds like you have just folders of projects.
It's annoying. it's annoying. But I mean, the greatest thing was that I've gotten to a point now where they aren't, it isn't sharp voices in my head. They aren't dreams keeping me awake. You know what I mean?
Right.
I've put them and been able to sort them out in a way it makes sense. They're on paper, and then you can sort and know which one is appropriate for the time and which one to push forward, which one to still develop, who to get, you know, because sometimes, you know, I don't have time to write everything.
Right.
Co-writers, you know, co-producers, and I'm, you know, not looking for everybody that's established, you know. Setting up a company is a great time to keep, you know, use that. I have a great ear to the ground. Like, you know, I still talk to fans of projects and, you know, various different people who haven't been given a chance. And then you get to collaborate also on that level. It's like, yeah, let's do it.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, I knew you were involved in a lot of stuff, but I didn't know to what degree of like you know, creative carnival that's happening in your head with all this stuff.
When you've been around, you know J.J. Abrams, and you've met Steven Spielberg, and you've sat with Kathy Kennedy, you've heard these great minds discuss and collaborate on ideas that they eventually bring to you. Like, this starts off as ideas and then becomes physical. Like, it's magic to me. It's like creative freedom that I'm like, I have to be a part of. So I'm just exploring the several different avenues of creativity as much as I can.
What types of things did you learn from Spielberg and Kathleen? I'm sure you're studying and trying to learn and trying to watch. So what did you absorb from them?
Well, what I love, and what was the surprise for me is actually becoming a part of the Star Wars family was seeing how much they support each other. You know, we were filming, you know, additional reshoots at Bad Robot, and Steven, like, Spielberg just rolled through like it was casual, like, and he was on set and spoke to everyone, and there was a moment I can never forget. JJ, I can't remember what it was, but it was on the rooftop of Bad Robot, and we were filming a particular scene. I don't know if it was Daisy filming, but there was a take that JJ done, and JJ wanted to move on. JJ was like, okay, cool, I'm done with this take. But then Spielberg whispered in his ears and was just kind of like, oh, you should probably take a look at this and then try something new. But it wasn't like an authority thing. It was like two friends collaborating on something. And I noticed that, and that bloody inspired me, because I was just like, then also, if you look back in the history, you know, about JJ and you see how his life actually connected with Spielberg, you're like, of course, you don't have to wait until someone else is established to collaborate with them.
Right.
You don't have to wait. You know, you don't have to do that. You know, it's sometimes about an energy, about the same type of passion to be able to get better and do something more that can motivate you to create. And then obviously finding out that, you know, apparently Kathy was a personal assistant to George Lucas before, and you're like, wait a second, now I'm getting it. You know, there's something magical in this unity and in identifying the same kind of creative passion in someone else. And I was just like, okay, cool, I'm inspired.
That's great. And I like that the unity message came back around. But I also, as we're kind of wrapping this up, What is something right now that you are particularly excited or joyful about? And it doesn't have to be anything that's you specific. It should be something in the world. It could be anything you want. Like, what is there anything that you feel particularly positive and excited and hopeful about?
I would say the young generation. I'm just like, you know, going back home to the UK and seeing everyone fighting for, you know, a better life and better circumstances and making themselves uncomfortable in order to hopefully gain something better. We're not noticing, but we're seeing a generation that are achieving things way before their time. And it makes me much more optimistic about the future, because adults messing up real bad.
We ruin everything.
I don't know where it changes, but you lot, we need your guidance, of course, to let us know.
Yeah, but
where it all switches out.
And I tell you though, in a couple of days, that birthday hits, and all of a sudden,
I know, all of a sudden, I'm one of you.
You're one of us.
So that's why I'm trying to spread the message on this podcast, because after this, I will become one of them.
This will be like the last.
I know.
Oh, he was still, and then it all
and then
changed.
It all bloody freaking changed.
It all changed.
But I'm excited about what a lot of young people are doing. I've been granted like the opportunity to meet them, especially on the press tours that I'm doing.
Right.
We're now engaging with young people who are heading, you know, creative content, and they still do stuff for YouTube or whatever. But I'm just seeing a whole bunch of young people kind of, you know, trailblazing, making their own path. And you know, social media comes with a lot of negativity, but on the positive side, you know, you're exposed to the kind of stuff that is going on, and you'll find that a lot of people have done that because they're inspired from what they saw on Star Wars. You know, a whole bunch of people are inspired seeing Daisy Ridley, seeing Oscar Isaacs, and you know, to see how inspiration actually works. You know, seeing that there is a much more spiritually engaging side to this Hollywood stuff, it makes me feel like I have much more purpose than just obviously getting money. By the way, I mean, I love to get some money.
Yeah, money's good.
It's okay. But to have that other side, you know, just because of my upbringing and what's important, I'm excited about that.
Excellent. I mean, it's been such a joy to talk to you, and I'm so excited. Now, you know, now when I see you and stuff, now I'm even more in the back of my mind, like, I'm rooting for that guy.
Oh, thank you.
I want all these projects to come to fruition, but also, I think it is vital that more people like you exist as role models to sort of fight. I mean, the more that you talk about positivity and overcoming, you know, anxiety and overcoming everything to really focus and create and be comfortable in your skin, I really do think that young generation you were talking about needs to see that. Mm-hmm. And so I really am excited. I hope you get the opportunity to speak at length more because I think it is inspiring to people.
And honestly, a big shout out to the nerd community, to the sci-fi community. No, seriously, because I meet you guys on a day-to-day basis, and sometimes I can't stop and speak. And the level of understanding I get, you know, people are much more, you know, caring, and I've been exposed to way more great people than I have been to the other side of this.
Good.
And sometimes we give the dark side too much of a voice.
Of course.
The light rises.
That's right.
It does.
Don't give in to your hate.
So thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks, John. It was so nice to see you. And remember, focus on the right part of the sentence.
Yeah, that's just the level one basics of positivity.
Focus on the right part of the sentence. And of course, enjoy your burrito.
Oh, man. Thank you. Right.
Thanks, John.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.